This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chwee Lin. The makers of Dallas Buyers Club, the Academy Award-winning movie starring Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto, have gone on an aggressive global campaign to target internet users who illegally downloaded the movie. Voltage Pictures, the studio behind these legal actions, have attracted much media attention because it led to landmark rulings in both Australia and Singapore, where the courts ordered internet service providers to hand over details of their customers. In the studio to help us understand what all this means is Fung Cheng Leong, a lawyer and intellectual property rights expert. So, Voltage Pictures, to start us off, has a history of doing this in the past. They went after close to 25,000 alleged users for downloading the Hurt Locker, but it went nowhere at the time because internet service providers stalled and refused to comply. So what's different this time around?
There's not much difference. If you look at the latest news, the case on the Hurt Locker has gone to court already in Canada. So, but this type of cases has been around since, as far as I remember, 2008-2009, where these corporate owners will go to ISP and ask for the details of the users. And in the UK, there are many, many cases where the users get demand letters from the copyright owners asking them to pay up a certain amount of money for compensation. And all this information, they obtain it from the internet service provider.
So before we go further, maybe let's unpack this. What does user mean? So in this case, who is a user?
Users would mean the internet users, anyone who download movies, songs, games, pictures, or anything from the online world would be a user. And generally, when we look at this type of cases, Dallas Buyer Club and the Hurt Locker, we are talking about these people sharing on the torrent sites.
So Australian internet service providers initially refused to hand over their user details because it accused Voltage Pictures for speculative invoicing. What does that mean?
Well, speculative invoicing, it's basically you pay up a certain amount of money to settle a lawsuit. So in that case where I mentioned the UK case, when the demand letter comes, it'll ask you to pay an amount of maybe £500 to £1,000. That is considered as speculative invoicing. Not sure why they use the word speculative invoicing, but it is an amount you pay to settle the case. And of course, £500 for a movie, which you can pay off maybe just £10 to watch it in the cinema. So it's almost a lot, many, many times the cost of watching the movie.
And when it comes to finding out information of these particular users, were the companies only allowed to look at the people who were sharing, or were they looking at the people who were downloading? Because there's usually quite a big difference.
Okay. Maybe I should explain how it works, how these copyright owners do their investigation. Usually, they will engage a third party, an expert, some form of expert, to track who is sharing all these movies online. So what they do is, for example, they go to the website, and let's say it's a torrent website. They download torrent, and then and from the torrent, they will track who is seeding all these files to the other users. So when they seed all these files, they will be able to capture the IP address of all the users, all the person who is sharing all these movies and games and all sorts. So once they get the IP address, they will go to the internet service provider to release the information, who is this user behind it. So, and thereafter, they will release, if let's say the ISP is generally the ISP will only release all this information if a court order is obtained. And whether the court will allow it, we have seen in Australian cases, UK cases, generally the ISP would say that we do not consent to the release of this information, but we will not contest. And sometimes they will charge a certain amount of money for them to release the information. They could be about $100 or $10 per name, but Malaysia we do not know. And with this background in mind, so would you get into trouble of seeding the movies online? If you look at the Malaysian law, it seems to me that if you share movies through torrent sites, you will be liable for copyright infringement. But whereas, if you are downloading it for your own private and domestic use, we are looking at two different set of offence here. One is a civil offence, one is a criminal offence. Under Section 41 Copyright Act, if you infringe someone's copyright, it is a criminal offence. I can't remember how much is the fine or imprisonment. But if you use it for if you use the copyright for private or domestic use, there's no infringement, there's no criminal offence. So that's why you can buy DVDs and CDs off the streets, pirated ones, and you don't get into trouble for it. So, but if you have more than three copies in the possession of the same title, you are deemed to be dealing with counterfeit products, basically all the pirated goods, lah. So where that is quite clear in the criminal side. Whereas for the civil side, whether the copyright owner can sue you for copyright infringement, then you got to look at whether the defense of private domestic use would apply or not. So can you download movies for your own use? It seems to me, if you look at the Copyright Act, yes, you can download it for your own use. But if you share it with others, you seed it, as I mentioned before, you may be liable for copyright infringement.
Having said that, what are the limits of private and domestic use? Because, sure, we have those situations where you just wanted to watch a movie, you download it, you watch it. Mm. That is clearly private. But on the other hand, you might be, throwing a party of 100 people, right, and showing this movie.
It seems to me like it's a grey area in the part, lah. But if you have a party of 50 people, if it's, for example, your birthday party, I think it's still a private and domestic use. You can still apply for that. But if you, let's say, you're having a company event, 50 people, and that I don't think would be a private and domestic use.
So, just to give a little bit more background, why has it always been so loaded whether ISPs provide user information or not?
Because of privacy issues. So ISP is our gateway, is the gateway to our information. Whatever we do online can be tracked through this ISP. If, let's say, someone posts a seditious comment or posts an offensive comment, all you need to do is get to ISP, tell me who is the registered user of this account. But of course, the information the ISP can give you is only who is the owner of this account, who is the registered owner of this account. But it doesn't say who is the user, who is the one using the internet account at the time of the posting, for example. So when in most cases, ISP do not contest, but they do not contest and do not consent, the judge will generally allow the information out to the other side. So in Malaysia, I don't think the judges are... I've not seen any cases where the judges would feel very strongly of privacy rights in Malaysia.
So when we look at the case in Australia then, the landmark ruling on April 7th, it forced some of the country's largest ISPs to hand over names and addresses of close to 5,000 Australian users who had allegedly shared Dallas Buyers Club on file-sharing services. What was the court's justification for this decision?
In Malaysia and even Australia and most parts of the world, we have this thing called pre-discovery order. So basically asking asking for a court order to release information of a certain user. So when the user, when the ISP is caught in some form of wrongdoing. So whether the justification, all they need to do is some form of, in most countries, the test is whether this person is caught in some wrongdoing of another party. So, of course, the judge nowadays have, with the Personal Data Protection Act in place, the judge has to weigh whether the right to initiate action, enforce their right by the copyright owner, outweighs the privacy rights of the users nowadays. So in Malaysia, we have not seen which of the cases where one outweighs the other. But I think the judge sometimes would need to be very specific in the application. So, for example, in the application, if they say there's a movie, let's say it's a game. They download a certain game, it's a game or shooting game. And when the ISP checks the information, the registered owner of the account is a 70-year-old man who has no of course, we will assume that a 70-year-old man would not play a shooting, violent shooting game.
Well, we don't know that about his life. Who knows?
Who knows? But of course, that could be his son or someone else who has done it. So in this case, is there? Would the judge would want to release such information to the user, sorry, to the corporate owner, because it seems to us on prima facie, this person does not seem to have infringed this case. In the UK, there are cases where I think there was an elderly man who has been accused of downloading pornographic movies on his using his internet account. So when they checked, he said that I don't even know what file sharing is. So that was his defense.
I'm speaking today with Fong Cheng Leong, a lawyer and intellectual property rights expert. We are looking at the case against illegal downloaders, looking specifically at what's happening with Voltage Pictures going after illegal downloads and seedings of Dallas Buyers Club. Up next, we find out, possibly what the objective might be on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me is Fong Cheng Leong, lawyer and intellectual property rights expert. We are discussing the recent case of the Dallas Buyers Club and illegal downloads and legal action and all the rest. So what is the objective here then? You know, is the studio looking to recoup their losses, or are they just trying to frighten people into stopping?
My view is that they are just frightening people to stop sharing movies and songs on online. Of course, I think if you tell me that, oh, we are going after people who are, you know, sharing things online, so what I'll do is just turn off the seeding part of my torrent. So,
yes,
it does create some sort of chilling effect on users not to share things online.
Music labels have employed this strategy in the past as well. Legally, are there any differences when the medium involves movies or games and such instead of music?
Not much difference, actually. But online seems to be an easier way to basically share things online. So when it comes to making money, I think they could have made quite a bit of money from all this speculative invoicing.
And in Australia's case, going back there, every application would actually be scrutinised by the judge who presided over the case, Justice Nye Perham. Is this one man's safeguard sufficient when it comes to, you know, releasing information of users?
In Malaysia, we also have a one man safeguard. The judge will decide whether to release or not. But I think ISP should play a role, a very heavy role, to oppose all this information of releasing data to users. Bearing in mind that the Personal Data Protection Act is in force, they must put the user's privacy first before they release all this information to third parties.
So looking at this case then, what are the implications for piracy rights?
Privacy rights.
Yeah, I don't know if that was the right phrase. But, perhaps is this something to be concerned about? Because you could argue that the internet is a wide open space. I can do whatever I want. Sharing is the name of the game. So conversely, if you prosecute me, then is it a blow for privacy?
There is always a limit to what you do online or even offline.
Anywhere.
But if you are sharing, let's say, 10,000 songs online, this is basically loss of income for the publishers and the music owners. So if you are basically a pirate, you should be prosecuted for it. And I think the ISP should release all this information if required. But of course, nowadays, there are cases where people being prosecuted wrongly and also being sued wrongly, all because the ISP released the information about account owner. But we have cases to say that just because you're account owner doesn't mean that you are the person behind it. It does create some sort of connection, but it's not beyond reasonable doubt or even a balance of probabilities that person is the one who did it.
So loss of income for the publisher is, you know, easy to understand, but is there a line of distinction between loss of income for the publisher and making of income for the pirate? You know, if I'm making money from it, then is my punishment or is my crime, I guess, worse?
Yes. If you're making money from from piracy, I think that is certainly something wrong. I think even the if you're making money from selling pirated goods, the anti-money laundering act even apply.
Yeah, because I think loss of income is easy to quantify, but many pirates don't actually benefit directly in direct financial gain from pirating.
Well, in fact, if you look at the corporate owners, whether their damages can be quantified, I think it's quite difficult to quantify because you don't know how many has been shared, how many have been downloaded, and how much money you could have made if let's say piracy doesn't exist. Of course, there are benefits to them.
Perhaps more people saw your movie because it was free.
Yes, because more people saw the movie and you the actors and everybody got a bit more famous because of that. But of course, people need to be paid. Rights need to be paid. All sorts of things need to pay. People need to earn a living. I think some form of payment has been given. But perhaps you can regulate it, like Spotify, where, for example, where they play songs for whatever songs you want to play, and Spotify will remunerate the owners there.
So what's the difference then between a punitive system as opposed to a compensatory system?
Well, if you're punitive, in Malaysia, we have damages up to 25,000 ringgit for infringement. So if, let's say, you are actively selling counterfeit products online or allow people to download your movies online, that is a punitive some form of damages you need to pay as a punishment to you for doing that. Whereas for compensatory system, you basically compensate for whatever losses the corporate owners has incurred.
But which can be difficult, right?
Which can be difficult because you do not know how many people downloaded it, how much to quantify. But this is very common in copyright cases. If people copied your product or copied your design, how much could you be made is very difficult to quantify. Amount of money you should be paying back.
So there have been cases in the past where users who illegally downloaded music were then forced to pay a ridiculous amount in damages per song. Was this just or fair?
It's quite normal, actually, for IP lawyers to ask for the sky when it comes to copyright infringement. So, and usually, sometimes they come up with an amount where it is cheaper to settle than going to court. So in the present case, this speculative invoicing, they usually issue an invoice probably about the damages of $500 or $1,000. If you go and see a lawyer, the lawyer probably charge you $500 an hour. So and the work thereafter will going to cost you more. So in this case, you rather settle the case rather to pay the amount of money. So of course, whether this is just or fair, it's very difficult to say.
You just have to go by the letter of the law.
Yes.
And aside from publicity for the movie studio as well as music labels, which is an ongoing thing, right? I mean, every time one of these big things explodes, you see these names in the headlines and maybe more people remember Dallas Buyers Club and decide to go buy the DVD. What has been the tangible and intangible results of these outcomes?
I've never heard of this Dallas Buyers Club until of this case, which is a good publicity for them.
It's a good movie. That's extra good publicity, but it is a good movie.
So, of course, the thing that you get is the publicity. It is one, the movie that you may want to watch. Two, don't mess with these people from Voltage Pictures, because if you share the movies, they'll come after you. So the pirates would be have to be vigilant when they want to share movies online. Three is where online privacy may reduce a little bit, but I think most likely they will come back. This is an age-old problem during probably 1,000 over years where civilization exists. Piracy has always been around, so there cannot be 100%. I don't think there will be 100% stamped on piracy itself, but probably to reduce some of it for a short period.
So there's been, you know, we keep using the word landmark, landmark, landmark. But as you point out, piracy has been around for a long time. And then if you look at online piracy, truth be told, I mean, in the age of the internet, it's also been going around since I don't know, the internet became widely available, right? So why has it been so difficult for more voltages, right, to come out of the picture and, or rather to come out of the woodwork and say, okay, look, we're really going to pursue you, stop doing this?
Okay. One is, of course, the cost. For you to start a legal action like this, but you got a huge, you need a very huge capital. One, you need to pay off the expert to do the tracking for you. Two, you also need to pay the lawyers who is helping out in this case. Three is you also need to pay the ISP, Internet Service Provider, for you to provide the information. Thereafter, once you get the information, you need to pay your lawyers more to fight in the legal fee. You pay the legal fees to fight in the court to sue them for copyright infringement. And then, end of the day, probably the damages that you get back doesn't commensurate the amount you have spent online. Sorry, the amount you spent on this legal case. So, whether this kind of problem...
You could view it as an investment, right? I mean, you could scare them off now and hopefully in the next movie, you'll see less loss of income.
That is correct. You can see it as a very huge investment, but there are also like repercussions to it. For example, in the UK, there's this well-known case by this law firm called ACS. So ACS Law was the lawyer who acted for the corporate owners who went to send legal letters to all the internet users. So because of those things, all those legal letters, they create a huge public outcry over it because they're all making like, they're charging like $500, $1,000 just to settle the case. In fact, after a few years, ACS Law had their website or their email account hacked. So all their data has been leaked online. And there was an Excel file containing of the users who have downloaded all the movies. And a lot of them are all pornographic shows. So, and the name, and you just imagine that you are the user and then you have been downloaded of this pornographic movie and it's all leaked online. And the lawyers were actually charged in court for the breach of the Data Protection Act 1998 in the UK. So this is one of the repercussions even for people, the enforcers like this.
So am I accurate in saying then that it's likely that should Voltage Pictures decide to come over here to Malaysia and pursue our local pirates, that ISPs would be likely to provide to surrender customer details?
Well, not sure what the position of ISP would be, but they would be very aware of the personal data protection. I have a feeling that they will come to Malaysia because the law firm that is dealing with the cases in Singapore has a branch in Malaysia.
Easy path.
So all they need to do is reproduce the same letter, get the information from ISP and get the ISP to release it. So whether ISP release it, I think that would be quite interesting. I don't know what is their position right now.
They haven't been tested. So if an internet user here is served with a similar letter, what should we do? How should we react?
Well, there's not many choices that you can take. One is to settle the case. You pay off the amount. Alternatively, is you have to fight the case in the court.
And so fighting the case then, again, just to reiterate, it's two avenues, right? Either I argue that it was for private viewing, or I just say I didn't download this
at
all.
So, but when you go to court, you need to hire a lawyer. And lawyer costs a lot of money. And if you can pay off $500, why not pay ringgit? Of course, the other alternative is call the other side and say, I did not do it, prove the information, give them the information, and hopefully that the copyright owners will be kind enough to accept your explanation and forget about the case.
To go back to your example earlier of the elderly man who said, well, you know, I don't know what file sharing is, so I can't possibly have done this. Why do we believe him? He could just... Anybody can say that they don't know how to do anything, right? I mean...
Well, if you have a 70-year-old man and then you visit his home to find there's no computer there, I think you can believe him. Or we go to a home... you look at his computer and you see his computer, there's no downloading software for him. So, or if you see a frail old man there and tells you, sorry, I wasn't the one doing it, then I think we could look at case-to-case basis, whether to believe someone or not.
According to the Intellectual Property Office in Singapore, there are about 300,000 cases of illegal downloading every month. It's the worst in Southeast Asia. Why is the fight against online piracy so difficult, especially, it seems, in our region? I mean, I think most of us would agree, even if you don't want to admit that you've done it, most of us would agree that Malaysia is also quite a hotbed.
I guess it's in our genes to share things with our friends, and like to share good things with all our friends. The access to content is very expensive in Malaysia. Last time, if you want to buy I can't remember when was the last time I bought a genuine, authentic DVD. But if you go to Pasar
Malam... And you can admit this because it's for private consumption, so
correct.
You're okay.
Yes.
Yep.
So if you go to the streets, it's only 10 ringgit, let's say, for example, for a DVD. But if you go to a commercial in a shopping center, probably costs you 30 ringgit. So the access to content is very expensive here.
And if you download it, it's free.
And download it, it's free. So, and we like convenience. So, and we don't want to waste our time to park our car just to buy a DVD. So in Malaysia, if you see it on the streets, you just buy it. It's all convenient. And they always think that this won't hurt anyone. It's only for my own consumption.
So are you in favour of the three strikes before penalty scheme to address piracy?
To explain what is this three strike before penalty, in certain jurisdictions, if you are downloading certain materials, online copyright materials, the ISP will send you a letter, warning to you. You have downloaded this show.
Stop it.
Stop it. This is the first warning to you. And then second warning, if you do it again, another letter will come in. And then the third warning, they will come, okay, probably the fourth warning, I can't remember. They will send you a demand letter, pay up this amount of money, or we will sue you. So this, of course, is better for consumers, actually. Because for one thing, assuming that you are not downloading, someone is using your network, piggyback, they call it, piggyback your network to download movies online. So, and for example, if you are running a restaurant, and bear in mind that there's a DBKL ruling to say that all restaurants must have Wi-Fi connected. So if you go to Kopitiam, there's also Wi-Fi there. So what is stopping all these pirates to go to this Kopitiam and downloading things online? So if you are, let's say, for example, innocent provider, it gives you some form of a warning to you before they take action against you. But Malaysia, we do not have this three strike before penalty type rule in Malaysia yet.
We've been talking about downloads and seats, but what about streaming? When it comes to online streaming of illegal contents, how liable is the consumer?
Same as before, we can always argue the defense of private and domestic use. I think also streaming would be more difficult for the copyright owners to detect. But it shouldn't be a tough one, because when you connect to a website or a streaming portal, they will be tracking your IP in any event. So they can always get it from the provider and get your details. But again, we have our defense of private and domestic use.
It's a great defense. And finally, what are your recommendations to government officials and policymakers who are trying to curb online piracy?
This is a very tough question.
Follow Voltage.
you can follow Voltage and you get a massive setback. Public outcry. If you look at the UK case, when this... corporate owners went to court asking ISP to release information. Consumer groups actually came to court, applied to be a part of it, and asked and tried to oppose the applications. So looking at that, I think if, let's say, people like Dallas Buyers Club comes to Malaysia, I think there should be a safeguard by the court, to maybe consumer groups to come in, or even for lawyers to come in to say, as a third party, to say that why should you release this information? And bearing in mind, these are all technical evidence. If you show the judge may not know what is this all about. I'm not sure about what's IP, you're not sure what's streaming, not sure what's BitTorrent. So when it comes to court, maybe there should be a little bit more time we put on it before releasing the information out.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Fung Cheng Leong, lawyer and intellectual property rights expert, about the recent case of illegally downloading Dallas Buyers Club and being punished for it. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.